Sometimes the Uttamadhikari Vaishnava may come down to, or not exactly come down to, but may act on the platform of Madhyamadhikari to preach. Then another major qualification of a guru is that he should teach by example. Whatever he says, you have to do. But he has to do it himself. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that it won't be very effective to tell someone not to smoke cigarettes if you yourself are smoking. Sometimes it's thought that, well, the most advanced spiritual personality, they don't have to follow rules and regulations. Actually, that's a fact. But what usually it's that they don't have to follow rules and regulations because they're absorbed in Krishna, which is the ultimate goal of all the rules and regulations. And the rules and regulations, they help us to remember Krishna. So usually what we'll find when you say the topmost devotees don't have to follow all the rules and regulations is that anyway, they follow all those rules anyway. It just comes to them naturally. They don't have to think about, I have to chant so many rounds, but naturally they chant. So this idea that the guru teaches by example, this is very important, because if it's thought, well, the guru is so advanced, so he doesn't have to follow all these things, and doesn't follow, then the disciples also, how are they going to learn? The point, just like you become a doctor, not just by reading a book, you have to be trained. Well, how are you trained? It's not just by the heart surgeon looking at you, or just by formally being admitted into medical school, that one can become a heart surgeon. The training is by the heart surgeon teaches the theory of how to do it. And then or someone else may teach the theory how to do it. And then the medical student, they are brought into the operating ward, and what they've heard about, they see it practiced. And they may see several heart surgeries before they are allowed to do it themselves. They may assist by giving the forceps when they're told and all this kind of thing. And the first few heart surgeries they do would be under the guidance of an experienced expert. But if the guru himself doesn't do what he says, then people think, well, it's not really that important. I've known cases myself where devotees have told me, why should I go to Mangalati? My guru doesn't go, so why should I go? The disciple tends to follow the example of the guru more than simply his precept. There's practice and precept. So that was one of the important instructions of Srila Prabhupada, that devotees should rise early, go to Mangalati. Srila Prabhupada himself rarely attended Mangalati, not that he was sleeping at that time, but he explained that I have this important service of writing books, which I'm doing at that time. So that Srila Prabhupada took an exception in that regard. He said, actually, I should go myself, but because I'm executing this important service of writing books, I don't go. But again, it wasn't that he was just sleeping through. That one should act as the guru does. The guru sets an ideal example, not just in following the rules and regulations of devotional service, but acting as a sane human being. One of the qualities of a pure devotee mentioned by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, taken from Srimad Bhagavatam, is apramatha, which means not crazy. So Sometimes it's thought that sadhus act in very strange ways, and they may do. There are cases within our sampradaya of Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Vamsidas Babaji. They acted in ways which were from the normal social perspective, uncultured, unsociable. Of course, devotees do many things which might be considered unusual by the standards of conventional society. For instance, the way devotees dress, and their hairstyle, and their eating habits, and the time of day that they rise. But those things must be followed by devotees, and they generally shouldn't disturb anyone, but a devotee should act in... I plan to speak more about this tomorrow, that a devotee acts in a manner that doesn't unnecessarily disturb others. Of course, he has to speak about Krishna consciousness, which tends to disturb some people, but it doesn't act in an irrational way or all the time become angry over trifles, not that he is banned from becoming angry, but he's not highly eccentric and certainly not immoral. Some people think that, well, the guru can do certain things which others can't do because he's a guru. For instance, there was at one time within one Vaishnav Sampradaya the idea that, the disciple should offer everything to the guru. So, when a person gets married, he shouldn't use anything with, first of all, should offer to the guru and then take it as guru prasad. So you can see where this one went to. The girl had to be sanctified, first of all, by the guru. Then only she could be, then only it was proper for you to take her as a wife. So that is a gross misuse of the role of guru. But it goes on to the present day, not necessarily within our sampradaya, but there are many gurus, or not many, but some who use or misuse the divine position, the accorded to them, the respect accorded to them for their divine for their supposedly divine position, to exploit female disciples with the idea that they get giving them some special spiritual mercy by doing so. So this is a very important thing, that the guru should be an ideal example by his behavior of what it means to be a Vaishnava. It's the behavior of the guru should be exemplary. That doesn't mean that he doesn't sometimes become... He may, under certain circumstances, become angry, not for his own sense gratification, but for the teachings of others. He is there. People can see him. He doesn't have a private life. It's not that he's a guru when sitting in the temple on a big seat, but then he dresses up and puts on a hat so people can't recognize him and goes off and goes to the bar. He doesn't have a public life and a private life. There's no difference between the two. He doesn't have any life outside of... He's 24 hours he has to be. It's a 24-hour job. Not exactly a job, but that should be seen by all. It's if someone's going off on their own, it's very... It's even if someone who's in the role of a guru, generally they shouldn't go anywhere by themselves, even for protection from anything that might happen. sannyasi, it's good to have a brahmachari with him anytime. For instance, in the modern world, in the Western countries especially, it's quite possible that sannyasi is walking and a woman comes up and wants to kiss him. It's quite possible. So brahmachari should be there for protection. But even if he doesn't do anything wrong, the suspicion may be there. Well, why is he going off by himself like this? Sometimes I have to travel alone. I don't like to do so. But at least at the takeoff point and the arrival point, I should have devotees there. Otherwise, suspicion may be there. Why are you going off alone? Especially if you dress in non-devotional dress and going off alone, it becomes suspicious. So the guru should not excite suspicion. Srila Prabhupada wrote, Caesar's wife should be above suspicion. You have an exalted role, a highly respectable role, but you have to live up to it all the time. He should be there, and all the time should be seen that he's following the rules of scripture, following the disciplic succession. These are all quantifiable, not exactly quantifiable, but observable qualifications to be a guru. Someone may say, well, I always see Krishna in my heart. Guru should be someone who's always seeing Krishna 24 hours a day. Okay, that's very nice, but how can you tell whether a guru is seeing Krishna 24 hours a day? But whether he follows the scriptures, how he behaves, how he conducts his life, whether he observes the injunctions of scripture, these are things that can be seen. It's not just some mystic hocus pocus. So actually this means that we're supposed to use our critical observation, critical intelligence. It's not just some, oh, I feel in my heart, this is my guru. But the qualifications are observable. Whoever's having a conversation there could probably do it somewhere else. It's a big campus. They don't have to do it right here. Indeed, if someone accepts someone as a guru and later sees that they've become deviated, then the disciple is instructed to reject such a person if they're under certain conditions. Of course, one accepts a guru very seriously after observing their qualifications, but then it may be that one made a mistake or that the guru himself was properly situated, but then deviated. There's precedent for that in Shastra. Guru api avaliptasya karya karyam ajanataha utpanna pratipannasya parityago vidhiyate. Even if one is a guru, the most within human society, the most exalted position, if he's not properly in Krishna consciousness, if he is not fit to instruct, he hasn't got a clear idea of what should be done and what should not be done, or if one was practicing properly previously but has fallen from that standard, he should be rejected as a guru. Srila Prabhupada states, anyone who is supposed to be a guru but who goes against the principle of Vishnu Bhakti cannot be accepted as a guru. If one has falsely accepted such a guru, one should reject him. So that's important, who goes against the principle of Vishnu Bhakti. Someone may be fallen in his behavior, but can still be considered a guru of sorts if he hasn't gone against the principle of Vishnu Bhakti. Whereas someone may be upright in their behavior, but if they are Mayavadi, then they cannot be accepted as a guru. Srila Prabhupada also says that a guru who, this is right in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, in the purport to chapter 1, text 5, Srila Prabhupada writes that a guru who engages in abominable action and has lost his sense of discrimination is fit to be abandoned. So it may be that someone didn't properly ascertain who was a guru and found out later that the person isn't qualified, or that a previously qualified guru has fallen from that position. So the qualifications of a guru should be understood. It's not absolute just by having the name guru that one is a guru. Krishna is absolutely the personality of Godhead. But it's not that anyone who calls himself a guru is just by doing so is a guru, or even by being accepted by others. There are standards by which to judge, which are set by Shastra and tradition, the parampara. But nevertheless, if one is to advance on the path of Krishna consciousness and attain pure love of God, it is necessary that one be initiated and instructed, initiated by a spiritual master, and instructed through this process of initiation, one attains the mercy, through the spiritual masters, one attains the mercy of Krishna. One cannot learn the truths of scripture simply by reading them. One has to learn them from an authorized source. Initiation is a rebirth, a new birth. we get birth, every birth we get. It's a birth. We've had so many births. Prati jamme jamme shabe mata pita pai hari guru nahimele bhaja hoyai. In every birth we get a father and mother. But in this birth, if we take spiritual birth from a guru by the mercy of Krishna, we should fully accept that and worship. Take that very seriously. This spiritual birth is the one birth after many births which will stop all other births. at initiation, the spiritual master, it's understood, he accepts the burden of the disciples' previous activities. Srila Prabhupada uses the word consume. He consumes the sinful reactions of the disciple. Therefore, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended, Bahu shisha nailoibe, don't take many disciples. Srila Prabhupada, commenting on this, said that, yes, that's true. One shouldn't accept many disciples, but for preaching, it's necessary. And Srila Prabhupada said, if necessary, I'm prepared to go to hell for the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission by accepting the sinful reactions of disciples. So the guru clearly has a very grave responsibility. The disciple has a grave responsibility also to accept someone who is properly qualified and then to follow. The guru is to give transcendental knowledge exactly as it was received in disciplic succession, without changing it. His duty is to enlighten, to instruct the disciple, and engage the disciple in devotional service. And the disciple, then his role is to accept that instruction. Otherwise, what's the meaning of being a disciple? Guru is speaking, just like Srila Prabhupada was preaching all over the world. Not everyone became his disciple. Only a very small number of those who heard him became his disciple. But those who did, he expected them to follow what he said. There's no one can come and listen, and everyone's welcome, but if one takes the role of a disciple, then there is supposed to be commitment. One should be ready to accept the order of the guru with the faith that what the Guru orders for me is for my benefit. He knows what is best for me better than I know. That is the understanding. If one thinks that, well, I can just do everything myself. I did it my way, said Frank Sinatra. You can do it your way, as you think, but actually everyone is under the control of material nature, so there's no such thing as doing it our way. We either do it in Maya's way or we do it in Krishna's way. And the Guru instructs us how to do it in Krishna's way, because sometimes Maya is so tricky that we may think, I'm doing it in Krishna's way, but actually we're being misled by Maya. So to understand all these points, the disciple must inquire about spiritual life and hear regularly from the spiritual master and strictly follow the instructions of the spiritual master, must serve the spiritual master, must endeavor to satisfy the spiritual master, must have faith in the spiritual master, must be submissive and humble, must faith in the spiritual master means honoring him as a manifestation or representative of Krishna, and therefore being submissive and humble, and must avoid committing offenses against the Guru. So, tadviti pranipateina, the first thing is that one should bow down. This practice of bowing down is essential. Srila Prabhupada said, regarding the little children of his disciples, that simply by bowing down they don't know what they're doing, but by doing so they make spiritual advancement. That's why I'd suggested that before the drama all the children come together and bow down before the deities, as I noticed that several, actually most of the devotees and then members of the public who are visiting also, following their example, we're just walking in and out of the temple room, but we should bow down before the deities. Even if we go in and out 200 times a day, we should follow this practice, bowing down. Otherwise, we commit offense. Bow down to reify, to use that fancy word, to manifest our spirit of submission. I'm here as a subordinate. And then one should make relevant inquiries concerning spiritual life. As Sanatana Goswami asked from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ke ami kene ame jare tapatroi? Who am I and why am I suffering the miseries of material life? Why is that? I don't want to be miserable, but I am. Why is that? Whatever, even though Sanatana Goswami was in a fabulously prestigious and opulent position and powerful position as the Prime Minister of Nawab Hussein Shah, who treated Sanatana Goswami not just as a subordinate, but he treated him as a younger brother. So there was a very close relationship, but still Sanatana was discontent and felt, I'm suffering material life. And he inquired from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why is that? Who am I? So one should make such inquiries, as Srila Prabhupada writes, without inquiry, we cannot make advancement. In other words, we shouldn't just follow the rules and regulations in just, okay, do this, okay, do that, do that. That's also good, but one has to apply one's mind also. And one's mind can be applied in Krishna consciousness when one understands why one is doing what one is doing. You may think, well, why should I bow down? Many people ask that question. In 1968 in Seattle, you can hear at the end of one lecture when someone says, having seen Srila Prabhupada's disciples bow down, he says, well, I don't see why I should have to bow down. And Prabhupada got excited and said, you will be forced to bow down. If you don't bow down now, you will be forced by death to bow down. So we have to go down, either voluntarily or involuntarily. So best to do so voluntarily. Bow down. And why should we do that? Well, there's a succinct explanation. That we are subordinate. And bowing down expresses that I have come as a subordinate, and it reinforces within our own mind that we're here as a subordinate. So inquiries should be proper inquiries concerning Krishna consciousness should be made with a proper attitude of submission, not trying to challenge, even if one doesn't understand. Just like Arjuna, we find in Bhagavad Gita, accepted Krishna as a guru, but in the course of Krishna's instructions, he heard something from Krishna which to him sounded just fantastic and impossible. Krishna told Arjuna that imang vivasvate yogam praktavanaham avyayam. He said, previously I spoke this knowledge to the sun god. And Arjuna thought, well, wait a minute, Krishna's the same age as me. And then he said, Vivasvan manave praha. Then the sun god spoke it to Manu. So this must have been way, way back in time. So Arjuna, he said that he became confused. How is this possible? That what is that verse? Param janma vivasvataha. What's the first line? Katame tad vijaneyam tamado proktavaniti. I'm just forgetting the first line. Anyway, the purport is that you and I are born around the same time, and Vivasvan was born much further. So how can I properly understand that previously you spoke this to the sun god? He says, how can I understand? He didn't say, oh, come on. You can't fool me. You didn't speak to the sun god. You weren't born at that time. But he said, how can I understand this? In other words, Arjuna doesn't challenge. Well, you could almost say it's on the verge of a challenge, but Arjuna, he presents it very politely that I'm missing something here. You've heard that phrase when someone says to someone else, I'm missing something here. I just don't understand. There's some important factor in that you're stating something, but I don't understand it. There's some important factor that I don't understand. And then Krishna gave the reply, which was based on what it already taught. Bahuni mevyatitani janmani tava charjuna tani ahang veda sarvani natvang veta parantapa. He said, you and I have both had many births. That's already explained by Krishna. But then he explained, this is the point you're missing, Arjuna. I remember them, you don't. So that's Arjuna's submissive inquiry, not challenging. That's just one example. So not only is one enjoined to inquire submissively from the guru, but expressly it is forbidden to challenge, not a challenging attitude. What the spiritual master says should be accepted unhesitatingly. It's not that one should inquire about everything. The guru says, okay, now bring me a glass of water. Why? Why can't you get it yourself? You drink too much water anyway. No, one should. Of course, in explaining the Shastra, one may question, but how is it like this? How is it like that? Not in a challenging mood. One's attitude should be humble and submissive. Now, this point that the spiritual master should be offered the same worship one would offer to God. This is maybe quite surprising. when the whole teaching is that the guru is a servant of God. But the whole idea that one should serve the guru, try to satisfy him, avoid committing offenses, it's all part of worshipping the guru or treating him on the same level of God. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of the India that he was born into was under British rule, and there was the Viceroy who, because the British Queen, when Srila Prabhupada was born, and later on kings, they were far away in London, and therefore the Viceroy acted practically as the as the representative, but was treated on the same level as if the king or queen. When in public functions, the Viceroy would come and would be given all the same pomp, greeted with all the same pomp. And actually, because India had all the facility, actually, and more of a culture of monarchy than the British did, actually the Viceroys, they lived in practically greater opulence than the monarchy, than the monarchs in England. So Srila Prabhupada gave that example, that the guru is to be respected, but on that level, because unless one has that intimate trust, then one can't learn, because one has to ultimately give oneself to Krishna, Atmanivedan, offer oneself completely in Krishna's service. So by giving oneself completely in service to the guru, one is trained how to give oneself completely to Krishna. But again, the guru has to be a transparent via medium. In other words, he doesn't say, okay, this much for Krishna, this much for me. But his own life is fully dedicated to Krishna, so everything goes to Krishna. Everything, all service, all monetary contributions, it's understood that it's accepted by the guru for using in the service of Krishna in a non-duplicitous manner. The guru may say, the guru may think, okay, I'm getting so much money, it's about time I bought myself a Rolls Royce, because I'm the representative of Krishna. But the guru doesn't think like that. If the disciple offers, he may take it and use it, as Srila Prabhupada sometimes did, and was criticized for doing so. When newspaper reporters challenged Srila Prabhupada, you're supposed to be a holy man, why are you going in a Rolls Royce? And Srila Prabhupada, he said that, well, the guru is the representative of God and is to be treated on the same level as God. God goes in a golden car. What is this Rolls Royce? It's not up to the proper standard. It's the best they can do. Paraphrasing Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was never put out by various challenges of snotty newspaper reporters. So that's the point. The guru is treated as good as God means one has to serve him with life and soul, give one's full heart, as one would do to, or should do, or is being trained to do to God himself. So the secret of success in advancing in Krishna consciousness is, as Srila Prabhupada himself expressed, that this was a revelation to him when he came across the passage in the Bhagavad Gita commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that one has to give one's whole life to the guru and serve him, that is the whole meaning of his life. Whether I'm liberated or not doesn't matter to me. Whether the material world continues to exist or not, that doesn't matter to me. My only duty is to serve my guru. So with such an attitude, yasya prasadat bhagavat prasada, by one attracts the mercy of the guru, by which one gets the mercy of Krishna. And yasya prasada nagati katopi, by the if one doesn't get the mercy of the guru, then whatever else you do, you can chant 3 times 64 rounds every day, eat just one chapati and nothing else every day, you can distribute 1,000 books every day, but somehow or other, if you fail to get the mercy of Guru, you won't get the mercy of Krishna. This is often pronounced by devotees. They sing, yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati katopi, which literally means by the mercy of the Guru, one gets the mercy of Krishna, and by the mercy of Krishna, sorry, by the mercy of Guru, one has absolutely no hope whatsoever in spiritual life. It should be pronounced yasya prasadat. If you say yasya prasadat, it means by his mercy, nagati katopi, no hope. So it should be pronounced yasya, yasya aprasadat, by his non-prasad. Technical point, but important point. So the secret of success in advancing Krishna consciousness is this attitude toward the Guru. And so as much as one applies oneself in the service of the Guru, that much one is advancing in spiritual life. However, again, it must be emphasized that the Guru is not God. He should be seen as a representative of God. The genuine Guru will never say, I'm God. He will say, I am the most, quoting Srila Prabhupada here, I am the most humble servant of the servant of the servant of God. And that can be extended. Servant of the 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 servant. The platform of, there may be many servants, but ultimately God, Krishna, is one. And yet the duty of the disciple is to worship the Guru, as Srila Prabhupada wrote, as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated here in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the same section that I read from, Guru Krishna Rupan Shastra Pramani, Guru Rupe Krishna Kripa Karen Bhaktagone. According to the deliberate opinion of all revealed scriptures, the spiritual master is non-different from Krishna. Lord Krishna, in the form of the spiritual master, delivers his devotees. So Srila Prabhupada explains this seeming contradiction in the purport. He states, the relationship of a disciple with his spiritual master is as good as his relationship with the Supreme Lord. The spiritual master always represents him as the humblest servitor of the personality of Godhead, but the disciple must look upon him as the manifested representation of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada in one lecture explained this. Srila Prabhupada said, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna instructs, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear. End of quote from Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada continues, someone may say, where is Krishna? I shall surrender to him. But no, Srila Prabhupada says, the process is that we first surrender to Krishna's representative, then we surrender to Krishna. Therefore it is said that the Guru is as good as God. When we offer respects to the Guru, we are offering respects to God. Because we are trying to be God conscious, it is required that we learn how to offer respects to God through God's representative. In all the shastras, the Guru is described to be as good as God, but the Guru never says, I am God. The disciple's duty is to offer respect to the Guru just as he offers respect to God, but the Guru never thinks, my disciples are offering me the same respect they offer to God, therefore I have become God. As soon as he thinks like this, Srila Prabhupada says, he becomes a dog. You can hear Srila Prabhupada say, becomes a dog instead of God. God is always God, Guru is always Guru. As a matter of etiquette, God is the worshipable God and Guru is the worshipper God. Sevak Bhagavan. So this should be understood that according to the principles of the Bhakti school, one should fully surrender to Krishna, and Krishna delivers the devotee, but one has to surrender through the medium of an authorized spiritual master. And in this way, a devotee understands his relationship to the Guru to be on the same level as the relationship with God. So, therefore, the Guru is as good as God is to be understood in this way, in the minds of the disciple, not in his own mind. And nor does he tried to take the position of God. But this is a very important point which Srila Prabhupada often emphasized, maybe more so in the Western countries where the whole culture of having a guru doesn't exist at all. And in India it's much misunderstood also. So the disciple thinks that the guru is as good as God, but the guru himself doesn't think that, he himself thinks himself to be the lowest, but that he has been given this service to do by the mercy of his guru, so that the guru may serve his guru by transmitting the same message that he received from his guru. The guru sees himself only as an instrument in transmitting the mercy of Krishna from his guru through the parampara to the disciples. So, God is God. He possesses all opulences in full, all wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge and renunciation in full. The guru does not have all of these opulences in full, or maybe he may have these opulences less than the disciple. The disciple may be more wealthy than the guru, although he thinks that actually everything belongs to the guru. The guru may not be as good looking as the disciple. It's not that, well, I'm very beautiful, so I can only have a very good looking guru. It's suitable for me. Maybe for your husband, but not for your guru. Materially, the guru may not be very qualified, although it is somewhat helpful in this modern high-tech world, but should be qualified in knowledge of Krishna and dedication to Krishna. But only Krishna is Krishna. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. The guru does not take the role of an enjoyer. He takes the role of a servant. Now, there's an important caveat established by Srila Prabhupada, that although the guru, he's not wholly absolute, but he's treated as good as God, who is absolute. So, in general day-to-day terms, although it's philosophically understood that the guru is not absolute, he derives his authorization from his guru and from the parampara and ultimately from Krishna, he derives authorization to instruct others, but in day-to-day terms or in everyday practice of Krishna consciousness, the guru is accepted as absolute. He should be, his orders should be followed, he should be served, and in so many ways. However, Srila Prabhupada established this caveat that the gurus are accountable to the GBC body of his ISKCON movement, which can create or maybe does create some kind of tension or misunderstanding, because on the one hand, the disciples are supposed to fully surrender to the guru. On the other hand, he also has to accept that an administrative committee of other devotees, they have the authority to, if necessary, discipline the guru. And there is an ISKCON law which states that a guru can be removed under the following conditions. That if a guru becomes openly inimical to Srila Prabhupada or ISKCON, or otherwise acts demonically, or becomes an impersonalist, or preaches the unauthorized philosophy of upper sampradaya groups against Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's principles, or blatantly and consistently defies ISKCON and GBC policies, or if a guru's attachment to sense gratification is serious, prolonged, or hopeless, then as per Shastric injunction, he shall be removed from his position as Shiksha or Diksha Guru. That's a GBC rule. And the disciples are supposed to know that the guru is not, it's not that, okay, I'm your guru, now I can do anything you like. I had one girlfriend, but I'm getting fed up of her, and you look like you'll be another one. Of course, Guru probably wouldn't say that, but there have been cases, and even ongoing, of those who practically behave like that. So that should be understood also. As you're being initiated by me, on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, and on behalf of the whole movement and disciples, and that Srila Prabhupada, that's coming from Srila Prabhupada, so that should be understood also. I don't plan to act in such a way that I can become a subject of such disciplinary action. My commitment is to faithfully follow Srila Prabhupada throughout this life and life after life, and your commitment should be to follow me on those conditions, that I am a follower of Srila Prabhupada. If I deviate from that, again, I have no intention of doing so, and I pray for the mercy of all the Vaishnavas that I never do so, and I pray that for the mercy of the Vaishnavas that if you perceive that I'm doing so, then you give me the stick of your mercy to rectify me. But there's a commitment not only from your side, but from my side also. Srila Prabhupada, while being initiated in ISKCON by disciples, or disciples of disciples of Srila Prabhupada, we should also know that Srila Prabhupada's position is very special. What is the word? Extraordinary. Well, any guru's position is very special or extraordinary. But nevertheless, Srila Prabhupada's position is of a very special status altogether. I plan to speak about that tomorrow and for some days following also, because I won't have time to speak what I plan to speak all tomorrow. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.